Let's change the way we do the world. Let's nurture habits that lead to better habitats and a more sustainable future for all. Get started at OttomanNatureInstitute.org/action.
Bring your family to meet ours at Audubon Zoo and Audubon Aquarium, where you can rule the day with Arnold, flip out with Midas, get chummy with Ace, and of course, hang out with Rue. Get your tickets today at OttomanNatureInstitute.org.
At Ochsner Hospital for Children, we understand that accidents and illnesses happen. Our 24/7 pediatric ER has you covered no matter what unexpected moments life throws your way. Visit Ochsner.org/4children to learn more.
Oh, hey, didn't see you there. Do you know what ultra-premium ice cream is? Well, in order to qualify for an ultra-premium ice cream, you have to have more than 16% milk fat. This is commonly described as a dense, rich, creamy, heavenly, sumptuous, decadent, indulgent ice cream. And our pals, friends, and partners over at New Orleans Ice Cream Company has the most delicious ice cream you could ever imagine. I mean, let's say Bananas Foster, go for it. Chocolate City, go for it. Mardi Gras, King Cake, go for it. They have the Po' Boys, which is like their own rendition of an ice cream sandwich. Okay, it's two different ways. You can get it with the vanilla bean or the Creole cream cheese. And it's this kind of like very soft cookie situation that sandwiches. It's called the Po' Boy, and you gotta try it out. Y'all, you can find New Orleans Ice Cream Company around the country, but also at our Rouse's, our dear friends, and other grocery stores all around. You try it out. And guess what? When you're not in New Orleans and you're trying some of that Bananas Foster or that King Cake, it'll transport you in some sort of way vicariously. NewOrleansIceCreamCompany.com. Nola Papa is proudly sponsored by Rouse's Markets. You'll love us for more than just the low prices. Make shopping easy with pickup and delivery. Everyday low prices, unbeatable quality, family-owned delivery and pickup options. We buy local services, catering, and bakery. And that Gentilly Berry cake in that case is so fine. Oh, y'all, you know the Gentilly Berry cake. Oh, find it at Rouse's Markets. We interrupt this regular programming to say that over on our website at nolapapa.com, we have the biggest deal we've ever done, and it's half off both our books, The Secret Mermaid Review and The Adventures of Addie Underwater. You can find them all across New Orleans, Target.com, Amazon, but only at nolapapa.com can you get it signed and half off. I don't know how long it's going to be there as to I see fit. Right now, it's good as gold. So at checkout for Addie, put in Addie 50. And for The Secret Mermaid Review, put in Secret 50 at checkout. And let me know when you did, okay? Just tell Nola Papa. Tag it.
Hey there, Nola Papa fans. This is Nick from Sandpiper Vacations. At Sandpiper Vacations, we specialize in making dreams come true. Who doesn't love a fabulous vacation? Picture yourself in Walt Disney World, Disneyland, or Disney Cruise Line. We are your ticket to the Disney dream. But hold on, it's not just about Mickey and Minnie. We're talking about Universal Studios, Sandals, all-inclusive resorts, and cruise lines like Royal Caribbean and Virgin Voyages. And that's just the beginning. Guess what? Booking your dream vacation doesn't cost you anything extra to use our services. We are here to give you that added value to booking your vacation. Sometimes we can save you some money. We'll save you time. We'll save you the stress and take out that hassle of booking your dream vacation. So head on over to sandpipervacations.com, click on Get a Quote, and let your adventure begin. Make sure you mention that Nola Papa sent you.
This is Adrian Sosby, your freelance content creator and editor of the Nola Papa podcast. From corporate videos to compelling documentaries, podcast production to engaging reels, I bring creative energy to your business. Plus, I specialize in YouTube management, helping you grow your channel and reach new heights. Let's collaborate. Contact me at 404-247-1083 or visit solidicemedia.com to see examples of my work.
Life is so much more than a blog. It's also unafraid, unique, and unscripted. A Nola Papa podcast. Oh, y'all, we're shifting gears. Shifting it. Because you know your papa, you know, we have all these different segments. It's great. I personally, you know, I love, and y'all know, I love watching the ghost shows. I do. And you know, we've had Kim Russo on, we've had other psychics on. I really feel like there's another realm that we have only skimmed the surface on. And I think it takes a really arrogant person to not think that there's something else out there. And that goes for, you know, ET. Ooh, I mean, it's all like, there's more to it. You can't just say it ends with us. That's so arrogant. But I have, you know, I know that there's more there, and I feel better when I'm educated. You know, I mean, you know, the more we understand the concept of the other side and know that it's like imprints, it's like, and maybe I'm wrong, but like, you know, you have such energy. We all have such energy, right? And we all want to do what, you know, the good or whatever our mission is to do. And then when we're gone, it's like the ridges in a record. And I'm fascinated by it. And, you know, a long time ago when we first had the podcast, back in the conception, I reached out to this cat because he's a big dog. Ghost hunter, okay, and I am I'm real tickled because, you know, when it comes to ghost hunting, you know, there's ones that, you know, dabble, and then there's ones with like 144,000 followers and you know, continues to, you know, blow up the reels. I mean, 3.3 million 13.8 million. I mean, a reel, you guys, if you don't know, it's a way to document something on the TikTok or Instagram for the people that don't know. But New Orleans ghost hunter, lead investigator, John Walteri is with
us.
He's with us. I am so excited. Welcome.
What's up?
Oh, man. So you have a following, and what's really cool is you don't have to follow others for them to follow you. That really shows the validity of the content. That's how I really find, you know, that's just what I look for. And, you know, you have been doing this for a while. Mm-hmm. First of all, John, welcome to the show. Where are you from?
So I originally grew up in Huntsville, Alabama, okay. But I've lived in several other cities before I moved to New Orleans. I've been in New Orleans for 13 years, but before that, I lived in Salt Lake City, and I also lived in Houston. So I've been, you know, to a couple other places.
Awesome. Have you always, you know, been a ghost hunter in all these different spots?
No, absolutely not. I didn't start getting into ghost hunting until I moved to the city of New Orleans. I had had some, you know, very minimal experiences as a child growing up. And even through my young adulthood, you know, in my teenage years, had been what, you know, most people would refer to as a skeptic. I didn't become a firm believer until I got here and actually started doing it. Yeah.
Wow. So you kind of, changed courses as when you
got
here.
Yeah.
Well, can I ask you what happened?
So, what shifted? Okay. Yeah. So like I said, I had some minimal experiences as a child growing up. I grew up in what I would call a pretty active house. But didn't have anything that really like kind of spun me around full, 360 from a non-believer to a believer. But when I first got to New Orleans, I had got into this industry through a friend of mine, through a really good friend that I met that was doing it. And, I would give him, crap. I'd be like, oh man, you're going, where's Casper at? Just kind of messing with him, like, oh, this ain't real, And he's like, all right, man, you don't think it's real. Why don't you come on an investigation with me and see for yourself. So I'll never forget my first investigation with him. I think it was in Houma, Louisiana, and it was a fairly big house. And, at the time he had a team called Paranormal Society New Orleans, which I would in the future join before I, started my own team. And so, I got to say this, even if you did not believe in ghosts or ghost hunting or whatever, the whole experience is a blast. You know what I mean? From packing the trucks, the vans, getting the equipment in there, going and meeting people, meeting the homeowners, hearing their stories, getting to sit down with them, and just the whole experience is a roller coaster, man. Right off the bat, I was like, oh man, we're going to have fun. This is just like you see on TV, like my buddy, he had all the equipment. We ended up going to this location, and he gave me, the first thing I ever got was a K2 meter, which is a very simple device. It's a EMF detector. It measures electric magnetic field.
They have the lights on it that basically measure.
Yeah, it's like the strength of EMF. So what that is it's a milligauss scale. So it gives you the strength of EMF on there, and you got a green light, and then usually you have some variation of a yellow, and then it goes to red. And there's a series of two for every color. There's a series of two lights. So it'll be like green, dark green, light yellow, light red, dark red. So you use that device to see if anything can come and actually mess with it and give you answers using the manipulation of the milligauss scale. So for instance, I'm going to kind of give you a rundown on this, on like how you can have electricity set this off, which is one of the reasons why we turn off power to the house. We'll cut the breaker boxes and we'll cut power to the house completely, so we can actually get a green baseline reading. If that light is reading green and you don't have any flickering, there's no natural interference of it. And, he gave me this device and he's like, hey man, I just want you to go in this room, it was the master bedroom, and see if you can collect some, any type of activity. He told me what to say, what to do, and meanwhile we had a night vision camera on me. We had a night vision camera in each room, and it was my very first time doing this, dude. I was super stoked. I was like, walking in there, I was a little nervous, and I'll never forget, I set that K2 on the pillow at the end of the bed. And, I was watching it, I asked a couple questions, nothing happened at first, nothing crazy, and I was asking a couple questions, and, I don't remember what the exact question was. It might've been some variation of, if you're here, just let me know, please go and touch that green light. But the second that green light started to flicker a little bit, man, I can't even describe to you like the chills I got. Like it felt like something was there, Cause that green light had just been sitting there not doing anything. And when I felt like I started getting stuff, that's when I started trying to do exactly what my friend told me. He's like, if you want to see if it's meant to eliminate any possibility of any rogue natural EMF coming through there, he's like, ask it a question, see if it can give you the exact color you want. Let's say there is some random spike of electricity, right? What are the odds it's going to hit the colors correctly or give you the exact output of strength of electricity to get that reading? So I remember asking, like, if you're really here with me, can you touch the yellow light? And that thing hit the second yellow light, and I was like, wow. Oh man. So like I was able to get it to kind of go back and forth, and from that point on, like when you ask me what changed me or what what turned me into a believer, that point right there when I actually put in the time and started investigating with these guys and starting to learn the equipment, how it works and stuff like that. Like I said, I had some experiences growing up as a child. I grew up in a fairly large house. I wouldn't call it rural Alabama. I mean, Huntsville's a nice size town, but still not a huge city. You know, we grew up on kind of like a mountainside, and you know, growing up, we had several you know nannies that would work for us. And one of the crazy things is that we had like three or four that had quit, and they didn't quit because they couldn't handle the job. They quit because they didn't feel comfortable in our house.
Oh.
Like that was the thing that they had all said, is that they had experienced something, you know, because they were there a lot of times by themselves, you know, just like tidying up the house and whatnot. And, you know, for me growing up, you know, I had been left home alone sometimes, you know, and I would hear things. I would hear footsteps, stuff like that, you know, and I would always try to like rationalize it in my head or try to come up with some, you know, something to make myself feel comfortable so I wasn't freaking out as a child, you know. But this is one of the great examples of how, you know, some people don't experience this, because later on in life, I didn't experience anything like that from growing up in that house that I grew up in Alabama. When I lived in Salt Lake City, I didn't really have any paranormal experiences, nor did I in Houston, you know. So it could vary geographically, location to location, depending on what the activity is doing and stuff like that. So if I was having something happen everywhere I went, I'd be like, all right, what's really going on? You know what I mean? But if it's only certain areas, that makes you, that almost like reinforces it. You know what I mean? It makes you want to believe it even more.
Right. Do y'all still have attachments to that house in Huntsville?
No. My father and my stepmom moved out of there. I want to say it was back in 2015, maybe a little bit earlier, maybe like 2014. I hadn't lived at that house since 2005, actually. Yeah, it was 2005 when I moved from there.
So in Louisiana, since you've been here, you said what, 12 years?
13.
13.
Yeah, okay, 13 cool. In July. Yeah.
Do you find that in Louisiana there's like more active places that you have found?
Yeah, so there's definitely, based on, you know, the town or the area, there's going to be you know, a variation of strength of activity. I found that obviously New Orleans has a lot, but even New Orleans, like if you were to break it down into neighborhoods, there's certain areas that have more than others, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a really small towns, you know. I one of my most active cases was in Springfield, Louisiana, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So yeah,
I was gonna ask you what town stands out. Or what parish?
Oh, so the most active case, one of the most active cases we had was in Springfield, Louisiana.
What happened?
Oh, man. But yeah, let me say this. That was not the town that had the most investigation. Hmm. If you were to break it down by area, one of the areas of New Orleans that we had the most investigations would definitely be like Uptown. Uptown, we had a lot of investigations there. But we also had some on the West Bank. We've had some. Chalmette has a lot of hot spots. You know, we had some pretty active cases in Chalmette too. But Springfield is definitely the one. I think that's the one that, like, in you know, for your listeners too, I also do rideshare here. So, I drive a lot of tourists around New Orleans driving Uber. And I get asked all the time because they see my decal on my back. They're like, what's the craziest? That's what everyone wants to know, is like, what's the craziest thing you've ever seen? What's the most active case? You know, but that, like, when that question comes up, that's what I think about, is Springfield, Louisiana, for sure. We had a case there back in 2015. It might have been 2014, 2015. We had a case there that involved a couple in their late 30s who, they were experiencing a lot of activity. The wife was, you know, she was at home alone a lot while the husband was at work, and she was complaining that there was something in the house that was trying to get attached to her. It was constantly bothering her, you know, and she had reached out to my partner Chris at the time, because what we did when we did investigations is we would have somebody, you know, that with the case manager is what we called it, and Chris at the time, who was also the founder, he was the case manager. So he would, all the phone calls, if you had a haunting, you called him up, you told him what was going on, he listened, he broke down and tried to really establish if it was a legit haunting, if there was anything that we could do to debunk it before we packed up the vans and went out there. You know, we would try to figure out, okay, like, is this claim sound legit? Can we really help this person? And And then we never charged the homeowners. The kickback was always that we got the activity, we got the evidence, we could, you know, use that towards getting people, you know, to see our stuff on social media, being able to see the activity that we captured and growing in the paranormal field. So that was one thing that we, Chris and myself, we always live by, is we never charged the homeowners for an investigation. So when this couple contacted Chris, you know, they told them about what was going on. And, you know, Chris, after talking to the wife, had decided, hey, you know what, we need to go out there and we need to see what's going on at this house. You know, it just sounds pretty legit. The first time we went out there, I remember getting just, dude, the vibes were just off, like going into the actual neighborhood, man. I mean, it couldn't have been a more perfect night. You had just that kind of like Louisiana fog over, you know, it was intense, you know. And we had gotten there pretty late. We got there like around 11:30 p.m. and started to set up the equipment. And I mean, I right off the bat, dude, it was like, you know, right into the investigation, we were already getting hits on the K2s. We were getting spirit box hits. We were getting rim pod hits. We were getting stuff that was affecting our equipment. And one of the things that stuck out to me the most about the house was just the overall feeling, like this sense of, like, when you walk in, you get this like sense of just like despair and dread, man. Like, I'm not a psychic, I'm not a medium, I'm not, and you know, I have my thoughts and feelings on that, that we can talk about at a later time. But me personally, I've never had any, like, you know, I've never felt like I was that, you know what I mean? I never had any ability to sense what a ghost is feeling. But man, when you walked in that house, you really felt like something was there. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah, like right off the bat, we were getting insane amounts of activity. You know, everything that backed up what the wife was claiming was going on was happening to us. So, you know, we had, after the investigation, we had sat down with the wife and we told her, we said, hey, you know, like, this is what we recommend, because we always want to give them feedback. We always want to try to help them and you know, in the best way that we can, you know, try to help them figure out what they need to do. If the activity is bothering them, what can we do to help them, you know, kind of diminish that, to help them lower it? Is there memorabilia in the house? Are there crosses that are agitating the spirits? You know, we'll try to figure out what we can do. And so Chris, you know, sat down with her and we talked to her about, you know, what we would do moving forward. And, you know, if she needed a second investigation, we would definitely look into that. Well, a couple of weeks went by. She said the activity, you know, was kind of, you know, it had decreased a little bit. But then we got another phone call by her and she asked us to come out. She had also contacted another paranormal team and asked if they'd be willing to join us, if we'd be willing to work together. And of course, we were fine with that. So we met up with another paranormal team called Ghost Quest Paranormal, or sorry, Ponchatoula Paranormal. And we ended up going out there and, man, this was the night, bro. This was the night. I'll never forget it. The first thing we noticed was there was another car in the driveway when we got there besides our two trucks. So we get there, we walk inside, and there's a priest standing in the living room.
Oh, yeah. No.
A priest with a kit. So I don't know if you know this, but the mainstream Catholic churches don't really do deliverances anymore. It's,
deliverance, it's kind of like an exorcism.
Exorcism, yeah, it's okay. A fancy word for exorcism. So yeah, so you know, it depends. It depends on the area, on the church. Some of these smaller Catholic churches will still do home exorcisms, is what I found out.
Wow.
The weirdest thing too is this guy was from also where I grew up, which was in Birmingham, Alabama, the priest. So the priest had driven down from Birmingham that same night to be in Springfield. Yeah. And so we get there and, you know, we didn't know anything about this. We weren't debriefed on it or anything. And, you know, the husband and the wife talked to us and they said that they wanted to go ahead and go through with an exorcism for the wife. We had known that the wife was struggling with a lot of experiencing the activity, while the husband had kind of like minimal experiences with it. But, you know, she was doing things like talking to it when he wasn't there, and you know, trying to, like, there was an attic that we told her, like, stop going in the attic, like, stop messing with it, you know. And she would open the door to the attic and sit there in the hallway and try to communicate with him. We're like, you know, we're like advising her not to do any of this.
Oh.
So
Was she like in a trance, or was she like just...
Man, I would actually say that's a perfect word for it, was a trance. Like, there was something on. And look, I'm not a mental health... that's a big disclaimer we have, is when we go to meet these people, you know, we tell them, we're like, hey, we are not mental health professionals. If you feel like you need to seek mental health, a professional, then by all means do it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We try to just stick with the paranormal. And so, but man, there was something that was just off about this lady. And I mean, she had that, the eyes glazed over look, like, and that was even the first time that we had met her.
Do you ask if there's, I'm sorry for getting deep in it. Did you ask if there's like any drugs or alcohol? Like,
no, we, you know, so, you know, Chris and myself are pretty, you know, we're pretty observant and you know what somebody's going to look like if they're under the influence. And this definitely didn't look like something where the lady was under the influence. You know, we didn't smell anything. She was not slurring her words. It was just this look like something else was in her head. Like, I think that was the vibe that I got even from the first time that I met her. So, you know, we get this like little briefing as soon as we get there, like, oh, hey, by the way, we're doing an exorcism tonight. And we want you guys to just investigate like you normally would and see what happens with the activity. So that's exactly what we did, man. We you know, we set up, and honestly, I'm not gonna lie, it kind of felt like we were there for a show. It kind of felt like like we were still there to help them, but you know, we're setting up, we're like, man, this is entertainment for us, you know, but we also wanted to see this lady get help. But like,
so
I said,
while she was getting an exorcism, y'all were documenting what was going on in the house.
We were documenting what was going on. Yeah, wow. We were setting up for the investigation. We were still investigating like we normally would. So we're still doing spirit box sessions. We're still doing K2 sessions, stuff like that. We're still watching the infrared cameras throughout the rooms. And, you know, I think the thing that really stuck out, like when I think about like the most active case we had, there's one thing that really stands out about this night, and that's when the priest did the exorcism, and when he would yell, our equipment would react, and our equipment doesn't react to sound. It doesn't react to vibration. The K2, like I said, the K2 meters are very specific on what they measure, which is electromagnetic field, and we were getting readings on that. Every time the priest, and this is like what you would see on TV minus the vomiting and stuff like that, you know? He's using the cross and coming up through the throat of the woman and saying, you know, come out, demon, I expel you, all this, you know. And when he's yelling that, our equipment is reacting every time, like as every time he was coming up through the throat with the cross, it was giving us readings on our equipment.
Oh, my.
So
how do you explain that?
I don't know, man. I mean, that's why we call it paranormal, you know.
Right. So to a skeptic... to someone you used to be, right? Because you said that you were a skeptic starting out. What do you say when someone like comes at you with this, like this kind of information? Like, I don't see how they can't. It's so crazy how someone could just be so stonewalled, you know?
Yeah.
It's right. Wild. So
I mean, you get used to it because like you have so many cases that you go through where you just, you know, you hear all sorts of stuff, you know, so, you know, the first thing you want to do is, you know, make sure that the person knows that, hey, you're there to help them. You know, you're somebody that's going to listen to them. They can't call 911 and say, hey, there's a ghost running around my house, because they're not going to know that nothing's going to happen, you know. So they turn to somebody that's familiar with the area, you know, and that's exactly what we did. And, you know, even when we were there, you know, we're still comforting that person and saying, hey, look, we're going to do everything we can on our end to try to make sure that, you know, we get, to, you know, and are able to document what's going on and try to give you our best feedback, you know. But also things can get complicated, man. There could be a plethora of issues. There could be several issues. I mean, like I said, we don't deal with mental health, but you could have a combination. And we often say that some of the most negative energy finds its way into people that have mental health problems. They're more vulnerable and susceptible to getting, you know, an attachment, you know what I mean, or a possession, you know. That's what we found out in, you know, our years of investigating.
Isn't that
and
something?
Especially Yeah.
Wow. And that book, and then they look like that they're crazy. And it's terrible because like what they're experiencing is real, but they look like they're crazy because, you know what I mean? Like, it's just,
yeah.
It's so unfortunate.
Yeah.
I didn't
mean
to cut you off.
Yeah, it really is, man. No, you're good. Yeah. But it, you know, it's one of those things that, it's unfortunate, but that's what I've seen, you know, and that's also what makes it hard to distinguish, okay, is this 100% mental health? Is this, you know, 100% something paranormal? You know, is it a combination? Because you're trying to figure all that out, you know? But I would say that I'm 100% sure on that is that it does find its way to people that do have issues, because it is easier for that to happen versus somebody that's full healthy minded that can fight it all, you know.
Exactly.
What I mean? And they're praise on the weak, for sure.
Exactly, right. And I bet it's purposely so, like it's done purposely because it's easier to get into the soul or how. Anyway, that's just my, you know, the way that I'm interpreting it. One thing, you guys, we are talking to lead investigator John Gualtieri. That wasn't his
name. Gualtieri.
Gualtieri. The second time, I always crash and burn. The second time, it's like, dude. Gualtieri. And he has New Orleans Ghost Hunters, him and his team. And I want to ask you this, because Hollywood, because you know I watch the shows.
Yeah. Right?
You know, I like the psychic shows. I like the ghost hunting shows. After a little bit, the ghost hunting shows kind of get monotonous. But some places,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't know if Hollywood has a part of doing it, but... You know, there are these landmark, iconic places that everybody says is spooky, haunted. And then there's the places that nobody knows about that's like the real deal, like haunted.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a tourist trap where you go and eat and it's like, you know, this is what you've heard, you know, and it's like, this is terrible food. And then, you know, and then you go down to the corner store and it rocks your world. Anyway, weird analogy. So.
Dude, you are spot on. That is like, you know, that's something I talk about all the time. You know, some of these big name places that are like advertising, oh, we're the most haunted attraction here. You'll go in and you won't get anything. But Uncle Joe's little tiny cabin in the middle of nowhere is teeming with activity. Like it's the Conjuring, you know, like it's crazy. Yeah,
so
it's
with that said, you know, Louisiana, I'm gonna call it out. I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna say the names because I want to know. I just purposely, I'm not being messy. I'm just, I personally want to know. Like, for example, the Myrtles. Have you been to the Myrtles?
I have. You know what? That is one place I have not been.
Oh, let's go.
Yeah, right. I guess I was deterred. Was it the Myrtles that Ghost Adventures went to and they weren't happy? They didn't get enough activity? Because I saw some TV show where I want to say it was Ghost Adventures.
Ghost Adventures has
there.
That Chad. His name is not Chad, but like.
No, Zach Baggins.
Bro.
Zach Baggins.
Yeah, okay. yeah, I think he did get a tizzy because there wasn't enough. And that's why I asked this question.
Yeah, I think that was the one where they rolled the ball, like the ball got pushed down the stairs or something like that. But that was like it, you know. The whatever paranormal team went and did, the Myrtles Plantation did not get enough activity. I think it was Ghost Adventures. And, you know, I really shouldn't let that deter me from doing it because sometimes you have off nights. Sometimes you don't get.
Sure.
Sometimes you have to do it multiple times. That's just how, you know, how it happens. But, you know, it very well could be that the Myrtles is overhyped, that it's, you know, it's you know, these ghost stories that have accumulated with no, you know, no credit to them. Don't even get me started on Madame Dolphine LaLaurie. There's a lot. Oh. You know, there's just so much in New Orleans that becomes grossly over exaggerated.
Oh, is that Madame from American Horror Story?
Madame Well, yeah. Well, she's a real she was a real person, but they yeah. Kathy Bates. You couldn't have picked Kathy a better Bates. Woman to play her.
We're talking about Kathy Bates. I mean, really.
Yeah. Lots of people don't know this, but Kathy Bates was actually Madame Dolphy.
Right. In her past life.
In her past life. Yeah.
So is that elaborated? Just like.
There's
the
a lot of
queens.
Yeah, so
Marie Laveau.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that is it becomes a fast food version of you know what the real story is given to tourists. You know, tourists. You know, you get a lot of these companies that want to spook tourists. You know, they want to give them these grossly over exaggerated stories that aren't real. You know, I mean they're real, but there's so much details that are just inflated, man. Like it's crazy. And it doesn't take much to realize that. Like if you go and you look up history, you know, you look up articles about this stuff, you know, you could tell what's real and what's not. I'm going to give you an example. All right. So, you know,
give it to me.
On any given day, you walk by Madame Dolphy and LaLaurie's mansion, you will see ghost tour guides, the people that walk, you know, the tours around the French Quarter, telling stories about this woman. Now, we do know that Madame Dolphy LaLaurie was, you know, an aristocrat in the city. She was very wealthy. She had a mansion. You know, she owned slaves. She kept them in the attic. That is all true. She, you know, there are accounts she tortured her slaves, but where the, you know, it becomes a gray area is when you start hearing about the methods of what she did it. And that becomes like the longest game of telephone you've ever heard, where somebody's telling this person that, and none of it's actually documented. So you will hear stories about how she did sex changes on her slaves, how she pulled out their intestines, all sorts of stuff that sounds like a Saw movie, you know what I mean? And it doesn't have, you know, it doesn't have that actual, you know, actual credit to it. Yeah, I get asked all the time about her place, and I'm not knocking any of the tours, you know, any of the other tours that you know, because they do give a disclaimer, or they're supposed to tell people, hey, you know what, this, you know, some of these stories might be exaggerated, and they are based on real events. And that is another thing I get asked all the time is about Madame Dolphy and LaLaurie's mansion, if it's haunted or not. Well, here's the thing. We don't even know because you can't even get access to the building.
Didn't Nicolas Cage own it at one point?
I don't know, Nick. I've heard stories Nicolas Cage owned it. I've heard stories that somebody owned it who was throwing that was throwing bondage parties in the attic, like, which would be the most New Orleans thing ever. Like, just crazy stuff, man. But all I know is that whatever the owners, all the owners that have been there, they don't allow access to the house. You can't go in and just tour it, you know, which has always been surprising to me that not one single paranormal team has been in Madame Dolphy and LaLaurie's mansion, yet everyone says it's haunted. Well, we don't know.
Right.
We don't know that at all. It could not be haunted, you know, just because terrible things happen there doesn't, you know, I mean, yes, it gives it better odds to be haunted, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's 100% going to be haunted. You know,
I mean, absolutely. And I mean, there's other ones too, like the Cornstalk Hotel. Like I've always heard.
Yeah, the Cornstalk Hotel. I've heard of that. I haven't actually done that. I will say Andrew Jackson, we did a sold out event there, overnight ghost hunting. And I think it was the St. Pierre Hotel. Both those had activity. I would say the Andrew Jackson had way more. The Andrew Jackson definitely gave us enough activity to run a whole night of investigations.
Oh, wow.
So was it eye-popping, amazing, oh my God, this is the craziest thing ever? No. But it was definitely active enough to where we had a pretty good time investigating it.
Awesome.
Andrew Jackson had activity. Bourbon Orleans Ballroom, very active.
I was about to ask you about Bourbon Orleans.
So Bourbon Orleans Ballroom, we did get a lot of activity. In fact, one of the craziest things that happened was we had motion lights, and we set up motion lights throughout the actual ballroom, and my buddy Chris started playing old, like 1900s, like swing music, you know what I mean? Like 1920s. And some of the motion detectors started going off around the ballroom. Yeah. So that was really cool. That was like, you know, definitely a moment for us, you know?
So you're talking about the motion detectors for the people that don't understand, you know, the equipment. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you were talking in the beginning, the EMF reader, and that's the one with the lights, the green, yellow, red.
Yeah, the K2 meter. Yeah.
K2, I said it. I didn't say it right. K2. And then you said a spirit box.
The spirit box, yeah.
What's that?
So the spirit box is basically a modified radio. It's an AM/FM tuner. You know, it's about like that big. Although the PSP 11 is about the size of my hand. The PSP 11 is the newer one. The PSP 7 is the small one. The PSP 11 is the big one. But the PSP 7 is about that big. It can be held in your hand. And it's basically a modified radio tuner. It's got FM, AM sweep options. So what you're doing is you're sweeping through radio stations, basically, at a high rate. So it's not just, you know, this radio station, that one. It's going, and you're going really quickly through all the stations. Now, what you normally do is you hook that up to a speaker, and you're going to run that for a little bit before you start the investigation, just get the, you know, to maybe help the energy get familiar with it. But one of the theories that we have on how that works is that the energy is actually able to, you want to provide to them a voice, because we, you know, ghosts don't have vocal cords. They're not able to talk like me and you. This is energy. They have to find other ways to communicate. So one of the theories is that we have is that they can actually come through this device. We're not exactly sure how it works, whether they're coming through the PSP 7, through the actual radio, or if they're manipulating the sounds coming out of the speaker. But they're using what's available to them through the static, the white noise, and, you know, you got sports talk, you got, you know, songs, stuff like that, and you want to see if they can actually make coherent sentences out of what's coming out of the jumbled up mess that you're hearing, basically.
Interesting. And then where's the ping pong balls come in?
How did you know about the ping pong balls?
Well, I watch some shows, John.
Yeah. So we had a ping pong ball. It's actually funny because that is not in our main piece of equipment. In fact, I don't even have any. But my friend Alexis, that's an investigator with us, she had a ping pong ball. And I swear to God, when we ran tours at what used to be an infant asylum known as the St. Vincent's Infant Asylum. That's on Magazine Street. It's currently called the St. Vincent Hotel. Before that, it was the St. Vincent's Guest House, which is where we did our tours at. But when it was originally established in the 1800s, that's when it was the orphanage or asylum for children. So when we were there, we were doing tours for people. We were doing private paranormal tours for people, which is how, you know, we supplemented our income. Because like I said, we don't charge for home investigations, but we did want to charge people to come and you know, have some way that we could actually make money and have fun doing it and let other people have fun doing it, you know, and give them an authentic, you know, experience to be able to experience ghost hunting. So when we did this, we would usually get about 3 to 4 rooms a night. You know, we had tours at 7, started at 7. We got a 1 hour break at 9, and then we'd go 10 to midnight. We'd have our second leg of tours. Usually a tour consisted of maybe like, it could be as little as one person. I've seen one person come on a tour before, or it could be as big as 22 people. Usually my favorite was about 4. 4 was like the golden number to get activity, because the ghosts, the spirits would be interested enough to come and talk to people. They'd be like, oh, hey, there's a little crowd here, but not too many where they'd feel overwhelmed, and not just one where they'd feel underwhelmed. So it was like 4 was like that perfect sweet spot. And that night we had about 4. And me and Alexis, you know, we're sitting there and we're starting the tour off, and usually we'd start in what was used to be the library of this orphanage. And we bring everybody in there. They had this huge marble table. Nice, you know, big circular marble table in there. And we, you know, there was no airflow to the room. We didn't have any fans or no AC going, nothing like that. And we all sit down, and the first thing Alexis does is she pulls out that little ping pong ball, and she's like, I'm going to sit this on the table, and if there's any spirits here, I want you to come and I want you to roll this ball. And I looked at her and I said, Alexis, why are we? I was like, come on. Like, I'm not trying to ruin the night right off the bat. Like, I like, honestly, in my mind, I was like a little frustrated, because I was like, you know, the last thing you want to do is have a tour, start off the tour, and like, it just be completely lame. And that's my feeling, is like, it takes a lot of energy to move a ball. It takes a lot of energy to move even a ping pong ball, let alone anything else. You know,
right.
That's what we call poltergeist activity. Any type of physical movement that the spirit's able to do, they have to conjure up enough energy to do that. So just that little ball, that's a lot of energy. And we had just started this tour off. And, you know, she, you know, periodically through, you know, the first 10 minutes, she was asking it to roll the ball as I was like setting up the spirit box and getting people entertained with the K2 meters and trying to see if we could get activity on that. And she said, John, let me just ask it one more time. If there's anybody in here, can you take that little ball that's on the table, that little white ball, and I want you to roll it I want you to show us that you're here. And dude, I swear to God, that ball started to, it wasn't like something that would look like natural as if somebody blew on it, like it rolled and it went back to place. Mm-hmm. It did this thing like somebody took their finger and like did this, like kind of like move the ball. Yeah. And I actually have footage of that. I'll share with you. I have some footage of that on my phone still. And that's this. Yeah. And I just sat there and dude, I was in shock. I even went under the table. I was like, yo, what is going on? Like, I thought they were pranking me. Cause I mean, you know, sometimes tours would have fun, you know? And I was like, man, somebody's got to be pranking me, right? Like, you're just not used to seeing that level of energy, that level of activity, especially right off the bat, man. Like, right when you start investigating for the night.
Do you find,
you know...
I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah.
Do you find that the moon plays into it at all?
I have not looked into that enough to see if the moon would affect, like... Are you talking about activity or like if it affected the ball or?
Well, not necessarily the ball, but like,
that'd be crazy if it pulled the ball.
Yeah, that would be wild.
This whole time we thought it was a ghost. It was really the moon.
It's just Luna. No, but yeah. It like, do you find that the way that the moon and the patterns, it like full moon, you know, might conjure ghosts more than, little bitty Chris moon.
Well, you know, we have theories on energy and how energy could interfere or increase or decrease activity. Thunderstorms, lightning, those are all things that could possibly, you know, invigorate the energy. Some people say, I think there was a show, if somebody might want to look this up, there was a show that was about weather and paranormal, like tornadoes specifically, like after tornadoes had hit, they would investigate to see if that ramped up activity. Yeah.
Wow.
So I wouldn't be surprised if the moon could do something. We haven't personally sat down and tried to like correlate, you know, the lunar cycle with our investigations, but
well, it my very mind well goes could, in man. All different directions.
Hey, man, that's a good question, though. You never know. It very well could, you know.
What's your favorite piece of or your instrument that y'all use?
Oh man, that's a tough spirit box. Spirit box, just because like being able to talk is like the biggest thing, man. You know, there's so many different. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people like the dowsing rods because they get to hold them and watch them. Uh-huh. They can feel the physical movement of it. Those are fun, but I really like the spirit box, man. I love listening to that, just that static, dude. That, you know, the hearing the little clips and tidbits of sounds and words coming out, and then you start hearing like something talk to you. You know,
that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Makes sense.
Like,
yeah,
that makes sense, and that's what the thing is. Like, you know, the chances and all the things. Like if you're asking a question and at the speed this thing is going and it answers the question that you just asked, I mean, what are you like that to me? It's in the pudding. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, what you do is fascinating. I could just chat your ear off all night long. I told him 30 minutes has been well over. I hope to be able to talk to you again. I still have so many questions.
Hey man, we're gonna have to do a part two.
Oh yes, sign me up. I'm in it.
Yeah.
Thank you again, you guys. We've been talking to John Gualtieri.
Gualtieri. Third time's the charm.
Gualtieri.
It's a tough last name.
Yeah. Well, no, you're Italian. Where's your favorite Italian place?
Oh, man. Don't ask. Don't put me on the spot. Like,
you might make enemies. I don't know.
I could piss off everybody, including myself, and say the Olive Garden.
My favorite. Oh, yeah. Just go Olive Garden and you're safe.
No, I'm joking.
That's my 8-year-old's
favorite. Actually, you know what? You know what's a pretty good spot? I don't know. I guess this would be considered Italian. Mendina's is pretty good.
I
think Mendina's is Italian, and Mendina's is good. You know what? Despite the terrible name, the Italian Barrel is. Okay. I ate there. I don't know how it is these days, but back when I ate there about five years ago, it was pretty good.
You ever go to Vincent's on St. Charles?
Vincent's? I have not been to Vincent's yet, but I need to go.
That's my favorite, son.
Man, I'm gonna have to check that. I'm gonna have to check that out. Yeah,
y'all, we've been talking again to John Gualtieri, and
there you go. You got it.
He's the lead investigator over at New Orleans Ghost Hunters. Did I say New Orleans Ghost
Hunters? No, New Orleans Ghost Hunting. Hunting. Yeah, New Orleans Ghost Hunting.
And I mean, he's the real deal, and I am just. I'm honored that you took the time, and I hope that we can do this again.
Absolutely, man. We got to work on that New Orleans Ghost Hunters. They're going to come sue me, apparently.
Oh, is there another one?
I think there's another one called New Orleans Ghost Hunters out there.
Oh, God.
I'm just teasing.
New Orleans Ghost Hunting.
I'm just teasing you, man. I'm just teasing you. But, yeah, no.
Well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much, John. And, yeah, I'm planting a flower bed for different flowers to come on up because we want you back.
Man, that'd be awesome.
Oh, I love it.
And I got a ton more stories, man. We just hit the top of the iceberg. So.
Just have the Rolodex out, you know, and just pull it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, from my family to you and yours, we send you NOLA love.
Oh, hey, how y'all doing? Are you in the market to buy or sell your home? Or perhaps you're a landlord looking for a top-notch property management service? Well, if that's the case, Steph has got you covered, baby. She is a top-notch performing agent with over 12 years of experience and dedication to providing the best possible service to her clients. She has a niche for understanding her clients' unique needs and finding their perfect place to call home. For sellers, she creates a custom marketing plan that highlights the unique features of the home to get it sold quickly and efficiently. Efficiently. For landlords, she offers top-notch property management services, maximizing investment potential. With Stephanie's knowledge of the market, passion for real estate, feisty for life, and commitment to exceptional service, you can trust that you're in good hands, and trust it, Papa says it. For all your real estate needs, call Steph. So just find her at realestatewithsteph.com. realestatewithsteph.com.
At Ochsner Hospital for Children, we understand that accidents and illnesses happen. Our 24/7 pediatric ER has you covered no matter what unexpected moments life throws your way. Visit ochsner.org/forchildren to learn more.
Well, hello, NOLA Papa listeners. I'm Rob Shear, and I'm the founder of Comfort Cases. As many as you may know, foster care can be a very difficult time. It can be uncertain journeys for every child who enters. And we all must understand that children enter foster care because of choices other people made. I would really love for each and every one of you to visit comfortcases.org to find out how you can truly get involved, whether it's going through volunteering at one of our national centers, or whether maybe you might do a drive or a packing party. There's a way for each and every one of us to make a difference in every single child who enters foster care. You know, together we can give these kids hope, dignity, and we can give them a search that we can... Together, we can give these kids hope, dignity, and love. Because isn't that what each and every one of us want? So please, listen to NOLA Papas. And I know you're all good humans. And I know that you're going to visit comfortcases.org. Take care. Well, hey, NOLA Papa listeners, it's Rob Shear again, the founder of Comfort Cases. You know, I know that each and every one of you are good humans. And for the last 10 years, we have packed over 200,000 comfort cases and have delivered them to all 50 states, DC and Puerto Rico, and have even opened up a center in the United Kingdom. You know, none of this would have not happened without you. Our community. See, each and every one of us must understand something. Your community is not your zip code, my friends. Our community is our human race, and it is up to us to make sure that the 438,000 plus children who are actually sitting in foster care know one thing, and that is they are loved. So continue to visit comfortcases.org and have an amazing day.
Hello, this is Doug Munster. I'm with Gift of Adoption. We provide grants to complete the adoption process of vulnerable children, giving them permanent families and a chance to thrive. If you have ever considered the adoption process or are interested in getting information regarding adoption, please reach out to us at giftofadoption.org. And if you have any particular questions, please go to Instagram and reach out to Real Modern Dads, send us a message, and we'd be glad to help you out in any way and assistance we could in your journey. And again, thank you so much for supporting adoption. We are here to create forever families and help as many families complete the adoption process as we can. Thank you so much, and we really hope to hear from you soon.
Hey everyone, Brian Rosenberg here, founder of Days with Kids. I have exciting news for those hoping to become dads. Until now, determining your best path to fatherhood and then trying to wrap your head around all the moving parts could best be described as overwhelming, complicated, and sometimes downright baffling. But not anymore. In early February, we're launching GWK Academy, a specialized program created specifically for queer men looking to become dads. GWK Academy should be the very first stop on your journey to fatherhood. First, we'll help you determine your best path to fatherhood. Then, whether you choose surrogacy, adoption, or foster care, we'll give you the information, the resources, and the connections you need so you can launch your own journey feeling prepared, knowledgeable, and confident. So be on the lookout for our official launch announcement at gayswithkids.com and make sure you're following us on social media at gayswithkids.
You got itchy, dry, rashy skin? Need an ointment that'll give you relief? Pink Salve, P-I-N-X-A-V. Pink Salve soothes, heals, and protects your whole family's skin from eczema, chafing, and diaper rash too, and not to mention the acne. Support this LGBTQ plus women-owned family business, and it'll be the best rash decision you'll ever make. And if you go to pinksav.com, P-I-N-X-A-V.com, you can get 10% off your next order if you use Nola Papa. Get that keyword, Nola Papa. Pink Salve, y'all.
Here we go. So keeping this episode rolling, because, you know, we just had a good talk with John from New Orleans Ghost Hunting. He's a ghost hunter. He really got my feet wet. And I had a friend send me a Facebook post of a guy that a local documentary filmmaker just released a really cool, creepy documentary in Louisiana. It's kind of like, you know, chock full of Louisiana legends, you know, the urban legends, and some of it's true and all that. But it's called The Forbidden Documentary, Occult Louisiana. And it is directed by Chris Matthew. And he's going to be calling me up on my phone, and he's going to be talking, because if you watch this documentary, it is full of fascinating different things that, you know, maybe some things you've heard of, some things you haven't. I know, and that was just my case. I hadn't heard all that's him. Hold on. Hello? Hello?
Chris? Hello. Hello, how are you?
Hello, Chris Matthew. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, man? Thank you so much for having me on. I've been looking forward to this.
I am I'm a bit giddy because, Chris Matthew, it's like you have collected every single creepy thing about Louisiana and put them into a documentary.
Yeah, it's really something that it's been a passion for me a long time to really create things that people can enjoy media-wise. I've been working as a talk show host, podcast producer that does video podcasts, and I had the inspiration a couple of years ago to start doing a documentary, and I was born and raised in South Louisiana. I figured what better place to really start with and capture a lot of the things I'm really interested in. On my talk show, I cover everything from paranormal, spirituality, the occult, mysticism, UFOs, all kind of high strangeness, and I thought I would find all the most strange and wonderful things about Louisiana that I could pack into a 90-minute documentary, and that's what I did. I live in Colorado now, but I took a trip back there. I had lived in Louisiana most of my life. I moved out here a few years ago. Took a trip back last year and started filming and started doing interviews and talking with people and visiting locations and put together this film. It just got released on Tubi and we're very excited about it. And we're actually starting production on our second film now.
Okay, so you're hitting the ground running. You have a number two already in production. So before we get in, I'm just curious on number two, because we're gonna get into number one. But number two, what's on the docket?
Well, number two is going to, we're gonna shift gears a little bit. It's going to be a series of films. It's going to be the Forbidden Documentary Series. Our talk show is called Forbidden Knowledge News, so we keep it on the theme of forbidden knowledge. This one, next one's going to be titled Forbidden Documentary Doorways of Perception, and it's going to be about life after death, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, altered states, psychedelics, the nature of people that have contact experiences with spiritual entities or beings or even extraterrestrials, and how all these things have profound connections to each other. And we may be connecting to some of the same things as when people think of aliens or ghosts. It all could be strangely the same phenomena, and that's what this next film is going to be about.
Wow. So it's kind of like a spiritual filter to it all.
Yes.
I love it. That's so good. Yes. Okay, so that's something that we can look forward to, y'all. But let's rewind to the current that we're talking about now. It is the Forbidden Documentary, Occult Louisiana. So I have a couple in my own head. One that we all know, you know, anybody that goes to the Audubon Zoo, anybody, and you go and you round about like the swamp area, and then what do you see? You see the Rougarou, and it freaks all the children out, and they all and to kind of tame him down, they decorate him in whatever, you know, seasonal situation might be coming along. So I know I'm butchering the pronunciation, Chris, but the Rougarou.
That's close enough. It's pretty damn close.
Okay. You know, and I'm not from here, but 25 years almost, I feel like that I can wear those shoes. I know where I got my shoes. You know, where you got your shoes. You know, I bet I can tell you where you got your shoes. You know where that's from, right? You're local. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The people that aren't locals are like, what is he talking about? Anyway, the Rougarou, it's like a swamp monster.
Well, the Rougarou is kind of like, just think of a werewolf. That's what the Rougarou is. It's a canine humanoid being that some attribute something supernatural to. And the stories I grew up with were really cautionary tales, very religious, dogmatic, Catholic tales that were linked up to what the Rougarou is. But Very interestingly, in our modern times here, the Rougarou has become sort of a global phenomena. If you're interested in the paranormal field and you follow some of the trends in people's experiences like I do, you'll notice that people all over the place are starting to see like werewolf creatures and dogmen and starting to, and not only, you know, how people would have Bigfoot encounters before, now it's not only just the Bigfoot, but they're seeing werewolves and things outside of in the wilderness and things like that. So that's a very interesting thing. But what I really focused on in this film was a particular experiencer and witness to very strange phenomena that included Dogman and Bigfoot encounters. And it's he was a hunter.
You talking about that man?
Yes.
My God.
Yeah, his name is Scott Pace, and he's just your normal guy. He's a hunter in right south of Baton Rouge, and one day he had a very crazy encounter. Probably one of the most insane I've ever heard, where he came into contact looking through his rifle scope. He saw not only a Bigfoot, but a dog man standing together, and they, according to him, started psychically communicating to him, warning him to leave the premises because it was very dangerous and the dog man was threatening him psychically. So
now
that's how it all began for them.
Yeah, and before you get in any further, because it sounds like he is like, you know, one too far in to a cuckoo crazy wagon.
Right.
This man literally, like, he looks like he is going to an LSU football game. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe stop off and like, he looks like a local, but not like a crazy Cajun local. Because you don't know that they could be really.
He's very respectable, does not do drugs, does not drink.
Kind of like accounting vibes.
He's just a normal guy.
Yeah. So like, it wasn't like it was, I from watching him, I got no weird him trying to pull the wool. Like it was either he was telling the truth or he was telling what he thought was the truth.
Yes.
And he was, and he, you know, could, I would think that he was just telling the truth. But anyway, sorry, Chris. I just went on a tangent.
No, that's perfect. That's a great segue into it. Because I think it's important that people understand, you know, that this, like you said, it's at least he believes this experience. And that's a very important part for me when I'm interviewing witnesses and experiences, is if they come off as they really believe they've had experience, then that opens the door that there's probably something to it. You know, they may not have the complete truth, but they may have a piece of the puzzle. But yeah, after he had this encounter where these creatures start psychically communicating with him, the dog man threatens to attack him if he doesn't put his gun down, and the Bigfoot says, no, he's just looking at us. He proceeds to pack up his stuff, get out the deer stand, and he looks back, and there's, like he says, there is about three or four very tall, hairy humanoid creatures following him out of that location. And after that, everything changed in his life. He started having more frequent encounters, and he's never experienced anything like this before at all in his life. He'd see Bigfoots peering through his window. He'd hear noises. He'd get this psychic telepathic communication coming out of nowhere. And eventually it escalated into coming into contact with different types of beings out in the swamps of Louisiana and having different types of experiences, like what some would consider extraterrestrials. So it's very interesting how the phenomena progressed with this gentleman.
So where, what swamp?
This is right near, I want to say Donaldsonville.
Not good with that geography.
it's near Baton Rouge, yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. you know, it's fascinating because my husband is a psychiatrist. He's an addiction psychiatrist. And, you know, there are different types of things that happen in life, like schizophrenia, that just happen, you know, later in life. I am a doofus from South Mississippi. I don't know anything about anything. I just know that from the inflection in this guy's voice and the seriousness in his tone, either it's truth or it's something he might need to get checked out. Because it's, you know, he thinks it's true. And, you know, that could be, that could hinder the situation. If we're thinking it's true and his mind, you know, is not in the best of places. However, the Rougarou is, you know, it's like, I don't know if it's hundreds of years old, but I mean, it's a legend. And this,
well,
man,
what also adds plausibility to his story is the other witnesses that were with him that I've spoken with, and just like him, very normal folks, don't seem to have any addiction problems or mental health, seemingly. They can corroborate a lot of his accounts and stories, especially a couple with the Bigfoot creatures. And there was one where him and a few gentlemen were sitting in his truck, and they all saw a beam of light come down from the sky, and 2 6-to-7-foot tall translucent light beings step out of the beam and walk in front of their truck down a hill in front of them and
what?
Disappear. Yeah, so who knows what's going on there, man?
Oh, this is why you're on here, Chris, Matthew. Oh my gosh. Okay, so you guys, we are talking to local documentary filmmaker of the Forbidden Documentary, Occult Louisiana, Chris Matthew, and he is taking us to town to spooky town. Okay, so I had asked him about the Rougarou, and you know, we were talking about this gentleman that's on his documentary that stone cold looks like it's the truth to me, y'all. But you go find it, you can watch it on Tubi for free. And it even has ads. That's cool, Chris. Like you watch it and then it has the ad and then you wait and then it comes back on. So I mean, moving on from the Rougarou, we were talking to, I don't know if you know, this is going, I'm going to test my pronunciation of his last name. We were talking to the ghost hunter, New Orleans ghost hunter, John, I'm trying to pull it up real quick. Oh, Gualtieri. And
I don't think I'm familiar.
Okay, well, he goes through the different buildings and graveyards and stuff, and we had him on last night, and you are following him and expanding on what we talked about last night and the paranormal footprint of Louisiana. Okay, let's look at the paranormal footprint, because I mean, everybody and her brother knows that New Orleans is haunted. Okay, what do you think, and your documentary, like the most haunted places in Louisiana?
Well, as far as what's been reported, I don't know if you've heard of the Myrtles Plantation. This is supposedly one of the most haunted plantations in the world, really. And I've been there. I've spent the night. I personally didn't experience anything there, but we did take some interesting pictures that had orbs and translucent things and things we couldn't explain, which was very interesting. but also places in the French Quarter in New Orleans that have very, very dense energy. And the whole state, to me, I had to leave because I think that each person on this planet has a different energy level or vibration that they resonate with. And for me, Louisiana had this kind of dense energy that I didn't really jive with. So I would, I really wasn't happy most of the time I was there, and I was always looking for other places to go. I'd always go back to visit my family, but especially when I'd go to places deep into the swamps or into the wildernesses of Louisiana, I would just feel this dense energy there. And after I moved out into other places, I could, I've realized that I'm very sensitive to the energy of different areas, and that's why I'm living out in the mountains now, because it's just such a high energy place for me. It's like it feels like home for me. But a lot of people that I grew up with in Louisiana have had this same type of feeling about the energy of Louisiana. And I think that there is something to that. And I think that there's a lot of history that causes this kind of, maybe if you want to say, dark or dense energy. Of course, you'd have the slave trade, which caused detrimental death and destruction and horrors that could have probably imprinted this dark energy onto the large areas of the state. And you have the practice of voodoo and black magic, which some speculate may have opened up further darkness, or maybe portals, or having communed with dark spirits that could have invited them into this area. So there's a lot of things that go into the legends of why Louisiana is so haunted and all these things happen. Some people believe that it's because of where it lies in relation to a certain ley line that is south of New Orleans. But I think it has just a lot to do with the history and everything. And I cover not only the history of the voodoo and pirates, but there is a prehistory of Louisiana that not many people hear about. And it's just recently being uncovered. Many people have heard about the Native Americans in the area, but this history goes back most likely before what we understand as Native Americans. Possibly even back to times of what could be Atlantis, or even very advanced prehistoric civilizations over 200,000 years ago. And that's where the mounds come in, which is another topic that I covered. But there is so much lost and unknown history that could add to the paranormal aspects of Louisiana. And that's just some of the things that could possibly go into that.
Wow. And he mentioned the mounds, mm-hmm. and we can just pivot to it, because it really, I see, different like History Channel shows, you watch in the History Channel and then they have all these hills or like these mounds, like by, it called? It's the rocks. What's the rock formations in Ireland?
The Stonehenge?
Stonehenge. Thank you. Oh, it fought it. I'm sorry. So, you're looking at all these European landmarks of like Stonehenge and like, all these like mounds, like miles and miles of mounds and like these rocks and stuff, and then those big black freaky looking face rocks,
yeah.
Okay, so Louisiana has mounds, and I didn't know that at all, Chris. I didn't know that. And what's the truth in the mounds? Like, because one thing that I thought of I know in New Orleans, like the Battle of New Orleans, and like they have the forts, and then they have like, you know, the big hills where they hide behind the hills, and you know, I don't know what that's called. My husband would know it, but like, you know, it's like a protection thing for the soldiers so they don't get shot.
The fort?
What is that called?
Fort?
Yes. Okay. If I said a fort. So are like they almost look like forts.
Well, what the mounds are is they're still really uncovering a lot of what the mounds really could have been. But at first, our historians, you know, even 5-10 years ago, attributed it to the mounds to the local Native Americans. But the more we look at them and the more we date them, they go back further and further, and they're most likely were here before any Native Americans were here, and they just built over them and tried to recreate some of the construction. What the mounds originally were small pyramids like you would see in ancient Egypt.
And Mexico.
And Mexico and South America and all over the world, really. And it's speculated that whoever built these ancient builders were the same ones that could have possibly built the pyramids in Egypt, because it could have been a global civilization that had access to travel around the entire globe because they were highly advanced at the time. And this was a precursor to the builders of the pyramids, and they were building them all over the world, really, and they were being used for anything from astrological alignments, rituals, burials, ceremonies, and even just they were parts of large cities, and they could have been used for anything as advanced as powering something like a power plant or ancient fuel or something like this, which we're still trying to discover. But a lot of it has artifacts that the Native Americans would put in the upper layers of the mounds, but in the lower layers, when the further you would dig, you would find these older artifacts that is really inexplicable how some of these things could have been built based on the understanding that we have of the ancients at the time. So a lot of advanced stuff was happening that just now a lot of the archaeologists and researchers are starting to uncover, and modern academia has to backpedal and say, okay, civilization's much older and probably more advanced than we could have ever realized, and that it could have also been a part of the civilization that we understand as Atlantis. Some speculate that Atlantis may have been closer to the Gulf of Mexico than previously thought, and that there could have been extremely advanced people building these structures as these precursors to the pyramids. And that's basically what the mounds are as far as we understand now.
You know what's funny, Chris, is while I was watching your documentary, in my head, I'm trying to think mounds, mounds, mounds. Oh, where have I seen mounds? And there's a few in New Orleans. One in particular, I have to tell you, this is all for fun and games. Just have to tell you, because one of our loving sponsors, advertising sponsors, is the home for one of them. Okay. Audubon Institute.
Yeah.
There is something on your property in one of your campuses that my children love. And it's called Monkey Hill. And Monkey Hill is a big, giant mound. It is a mound, and then as I'm watching this documentary, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, it's Monkey Hill. It is a mound. And then I'm thinking, oh, it's built on top of a natural park. Like, no one can do anything to it because it's in a natural park. Like, it's a mound, and literally no one can touch it. Is this a, it's inside a park. Is it a conspiracy theory? Yes. But
well, you want to know about a conspiracy theory? The best part about these mounds to me, the most interesting and fascinating part, is they found remains, skeletal remains of humanoids that were anywhere between 6, 7, 8. Then you get the reports that didn't come from the mainstream newspaper, from the mainstream like the Smithsonian, but came from local newspapers and diggers that were finding these mounds on their own. They found skeletons up to 10 to 15 foot tall. So that means they were burying giants in these. And the question is, were the giants the leaders of the community? Was everyone just massive back in that time? The mounds at LSU campus were recently redated to over 200,000 years ago. So it's possible during that time period, we were either coexisting with giants, or maybe we were all giants. I don't know.
Wow. Like the Cyclopses, you know? I mean, really? Dang. So fascinating. I mean, because think about the mounds, y'all, and different areas that you know of. So, pivoting. We can punch the brakes on this one for now until we meet again. But one thing I love to do when my friends come to town that aren't from New Orleans is take them on a walk up Esplanade. It's beautiful. Esplanade is just, it's gorgeous. And then go eat at the old Pirate Saloon Tavern, Port of Call. Okay. Grab delicious burger. They only have burgers. They have burgers and potatoes. Like,
yeah.
Baked potatoes. And a salad. Okay. Burger, baked potatoes, and salads. And then you can get your booze, your rum and your punches and stuff. But I shit you not, it's legit an old pirate saloon. And legend be told that there's a pirate that everybody knows would walk the streets of Esplanade. And you cover this in your documentary. I am fascinated because is it real true? Is it real true?
Well, that's the thing. And that's the thing about history in general, really. It's written by those who are the victors. It's written by those who are in power. And it's all based on their personal perception of things. So did it really happen that way? I don't know. According to them, it did. But I don't think we'll ever know what really happened throughout our history. And it's a sad thing. So all we can do is go what's based off of the literature and the writings of the times. So based off of that, Jean Lafitte, the pirate you're speaking of, was a very infamous character in New Orleans. And he
attractive
was
too.
Well, apparently so, yes. And he had the legends are from very tall tales to very simple things, and supposedly he had this kind of relationship with the governor of Louisiana and the mayor of New Orleans, to where they would constantly be having these cat and mouse type battles. He would eventually become involved very heavily with the wars of 1812. And it's supposedly because of him that we had such a great victory, because of his pirate friends that were brought in towards the end of the battle and miraculously pulled off a great victory for the United States. So there's all kinds of legends, and the haunting legends of Jean Lafitte are very prevalent in the French Quarter, in Pirate's Alley, and the location that you were just talking about, the bar. Where people are still claiming that they can see the ghost of Jean Lafitte.
Oh, there really?
Is, Oh, yeah, there's places in the French Quarter, in Pirate's Alley, where people have... this is an ongoing legend where they'll be walking and either somebody will be, you know, giving a ghost tour, or they'll just be walking, having a good time, having a drink, and somebody, usually a young lady, will feel some grabby hands on their backsides, and supposedly this is the ghostly groping hands of some of the pirates, including Jean Lafitte, who still want to get a little handsy. So.
Wow.
Yeah, dang. Yeah. Fun stuff there.
Okay. Y'all see why New Orleans is so cool. I mean, like, you can't make that stuff up. And when you do, it sounds real cool. So I could just keep talking. There's so much stuff. So, Chris, I said I wanted to end it there. Let's end it with your work of art that you did. What is one of your favorite chapters or topics that we have not talked about that is part of your documentary?
Well, we really covered a lot of it. I mean, we didn't really get too in-depth about the voodoo and Marie Laveau. My favorite part about the project is the Dogman and Bigfoot, because this is something that I'm really been deeply into research about. When I first started covering these paranormal topics, I thought Bigfoot was kind of a joke. Maybe they had these, you know, primate-like creatures out there somewhere. But now there's so much high strangeness and so many reports of people that have come across these creatures like Bigfoot or Dogman. But it's not just a hairy creature. They're associated with disappearing all of a sudden, walking into nothing, blending in with the trees to a point to where it seems like they're morphing into different things. Sometimes they've been associated with UFOs, lights in the sky, telepathic communication, gifting. They've been bringing people gifts, and I know a group of researchers that exchange gifts with Bigfoots. So this is one of my favorite topics to begin with, and any type of, you know, paranormal, unexplained, high strangeness, that's what I'm all about. And that was really some of my favorite stuff to cover, and hearing Scott's incredible stories, from Bigfoot to little hairy people to aliens to lights in the sky and everything else. It was fun. It was really fun.
What really is fascinating to me, because we've always seen the Bigfoot, you know, stories from television and the magazines and the Inquirer and all that. But the mind reading thing really gave it a more complex layer of what we're talking about. Like, you know, it's not just, you know, some, you know, hairy hippie that has just like regenerated through the years. This is like, you know, could be like, you know, ET situation. And I mean, and I had never thought of it like that. I thought he was like Harry the hippie that just like grew into, you know, but it seems much more complex, you know, and your documentary really brings about a sense of, I think, a new age way of understanding the lore of what we've always heard, and just putting it in a really cool, jam-packed documentary. And the documentary, folks, I'm talking about is the occult. I don't have it in front of me. It's Occult Louisiana. Why'd it go away, man? It's by Chris Matthew, and it's Occult Louisiana, the Forbidden documentary. And you can find it free on Tubi, and which is really cool because it literally is free and you just go there and you watch it. I can't wait to have you back. Chris Matthews.
Oh, man, this was great. Thank you so much for having me on.
I mean, this, it really is great because, I mean, I want to talk more about E.T. and extraterrestrials.
Oh, yeah, tell you what, if you want to talk weirdness, I'm your guy anytime.
I'd love it. Like you're doing the spiritual thing, I love that too, but I'd like to talk about aliens next. Sure, we're gonna have fun. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. And I just want to say from my family to you and yours, we send you NOLA love and all the things, and thank you again. And y'all, where can we find your stuff?
Sure. Yeah. Well, the daily podcast is called Forbidden Knowledge News. You can find it on all podcast platforms. Our website is forbiddenknowledge.news. We run a podcast network. We host about 8 other shows on that network, all kind of ranging in the same paranormal, conspiratorial, strange realms. If you would like to help with a donation for funding the new film, it would be greatly appreciated. We're all self-funded. It's just me and my fiance that do this, so it's hard work, and we appreciate anything. You can go to supportfkn.com. That would be greatly appreciated. And yeah, you can find our video podcast on Rumble and Rockfin. That's Rokfin. We got kicked off of YouTube because they don't like when we talk about true stuff for some reason, you know. But that's a different story. So, yeah. And of course, the Forbidden documentary, Occult Louisiana, is on Tubi. It's on Freevee. It's on a couple of other streaming platforms. The easiest way to watch it is on Tubi, though.
Incredible. It really is easy. Like, if I can find it on my television, anybody can. And just the easy accessibility. Literally, Shannon was like, sent it to me and was like, oh my God, you gotta watch this. And I was like, oh, okay. I picked up my remote. I put it in. Bam. Like, literally, it was a 3-minute thing. Technology is so cool, but it could be also so bad. Anyway, Chris, thank you so much. And I will be in touch. And until then, NOLA love.
You got itchy, dry, rashy skin? Need an ointment that'll give you relief? Pink Salve, P-I-N-X-A-V, Pink Salve soothes, heals, and protects your whole family's skin from eczema, chafing, and diaper rash too, and not to mention the acne. Support this LGBTQ+ women-owned family business, and it'll be the best rash decision you'll ever make. And if you go to pinksav.com, P-I-N-X-A-V.com, you can get 10% off your next order if you use NOLA Papa. Get that keyword, NOLA Papa. Pinksav, y'all.
Are you ready to embark on a magical journey with your family? Look no further. Welcome to Sandpiper Vacations, where we specialize in crafting unforgettable experiences for LGBTQ+ families. Whether you are dreaming of a relaxing cruise, an all-inclusive resort, or the tropical islands of Hawaii, we've got you covered. Our gay-owned and operated travel agency is dedicated to creating inclusive and memorable experiences for families just like yours. Picture this, a stress-free vacation where every detail is taken care of. That's what we're here for. At Sandpiper Vacations, we understand the unique needs and desires of LGBTQ+ families, and we've curated the perfect destinations just for you. Our planning services are completely free and designed to make your vacation planning as hassle-free as possible. So why stress over planning when you can leave it up to the experts? Let Sandpiper Vacations turn your travel dreams into reality. Visit our website at sandpipervacations.com or give us a call or shoot us a text at 614-407-3232.
Ooh, y'all, it takes a village to make this show happen. And it definitely couldn't happen without the generous pockets from our family of sponsors like Ochsner Hospital for Children, Ochsner.org, Rouse's Markets, Pink Salve Diaper Rash Cream at pinksav.com. Sandpiper Vacations at sandpipervacations.com. Comfort Cases. Find them at comfortcases.org.
New Orleans Ice Cream Company. Find them at neworleansicecream.com. Real Estate with Steph. Find her over at realestatewithsteph.com. Our beloved Audubon Institute. Find them at audubininstitute.org. Kids Dream Dress Boutique. Find them at kidsdreamus.com. And Zach George and his Dog Training Revolution. Find him on YouTube. Our partners like gazewithkids.com and all the others that help. But we cannot forget our show's director and editor and knower of all digital things, Adrian over at Ice Media. And of course, we can't forget y'all. Thank you so much for listening. We couldn't have it without you. And if you know anyone that would like to become a partner with NolaPapa.com, you can send them to Eric@NolaPapa.com. Shoot me an email, and I'll shoot it right back, baby. Until then, Nola Love.